You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. We're recording on a Tuesday. It is the Monday pod, but yesterday was Boxing Day. A lot was going on Christmas-wise, so we thought that you'd give us a day leeway. So thank you for bearing with us. But here we are to look forward to the return of La Liga. Sid's been off covering the World Cup for the last 7 weeks or so. You're still in World Cup mode, Sid, aren't you? You're not in La Liga mode yet. It starts in 2 days.
I know, I'm finding it really quite difficult, not necessarily to kind of get into La Liga, as to shift my mind into something else. I mean, this is a much more general point about how quickly the media moves on, and I think the media moves on too fast. And I think we're always looking for the next thing, and what's the preview of the next thing, and what's coming up? Because, of course, part of it is about, I suppose, selling the product that's coming rather than enjoying the thing that's just happened. But I'm finding myself much more drawn to kind of reading things about the World Cup and going back and watching games. And I got back from Qatar and watched the final again and watched the build-up to the final. And I'd recorded the ITV version. For some reason, I couldn't get BBC, which is most frustrating. And sort of watched the build-up to the final and tried to watch it again as if I was watching it live and kind of have a feel for it. And I'm finding myself much more drawn to those pieces about how Argentina won it and Messi winning it and Mbappe and everything, than I am to hang on this football around the corner. Now, I think today, yesterday might have changed it slightly because, as you said, it was Boxing Day, which of course meant that there was English football, which meant there was suddenly a focus of it actually is happening now. And the Spanish League has, for a very long time, this has been one of the things that Javier Tebas, the president, has been focused on, this idea that you can't allow England to dominate the Christmas period on its own. And so you have to put up some games to challenge England. He would love it to be on Boxing Day itself. I don't think that's going to happen in the short term. I suspect it will happen in the mid to long term. But it does mean that we've got games. Is it tomorrow or the day after? The day after.
Hopefully our listeners are looking forward to the return of La Liga and actively seeking out content which previews the return of La Liga, unlike yourself. So that's what we're
here to do. Starting to. No, because it's a professional obligation for me now. I'm just finding it quite hard to get my head around it.
All right. Well, let's try and get our head around it together, and it can be a process. You mean to tell me you're not looking forward to Getafe against Mallorca on Friday?
I will be going to that.
Of course you will. Bravo de Sydney. That's it. This is the fixture list, which is coming up because it kicks off on Thursday with the Michel Derby, Girona, his current club, against Rayo Vallecano, his former club. Then we've got a tasty-looking game, Betis against Athletic Club, and Atletico Madrid against Elche. Are you back in time to watch that?
I am, yes. On the telly, though. I won't make it to the ground. I'll be rolling. Although, actually, you know what? You've just given me a thought.
It's next to the airport.
It's right next to the airport. Hang on just a moment.
you're already back in the spirit. Then on Friday, we've got Getafe against Mallorca, Celta Vigo against Sevilla, Andalus derby between Cadiz and Almeria, although there's about 400 kilometres between the two cities, so it's not exactly a local derby. Valladolid against Real Madrid at 9:30 p.m. on the 30th of December at the Estadio José Zorrilla, which is possibly the coldest place in Western Europe.
It will be chilly.
Let's see. Then on Saturday, it's New Year's Eve, and we've got local matches. So we've got the Barcelona derby at the Camp Nou, Barca against Espanyol. You've got Real Sociedad against Osasuna, and Villarreal against Valencia at the all-new Estadio de la Cerámica. They've not played there all season, Villarreal. They've been redoing it. It's going to be ready, and it's going to look pretty, pretty special. Those are the fixtures coming up then. What does the table look like? Because we're going to have people who are listening to us who haven't actually looked at the table for the last 7 weeks. Well, Barcelona are top. They're 2 points ahead of Real Madrid. And then there's a bit of a jump in the points to Real Sociedad, who are 9 points back in third, Athletic Club in fourth. There's actually seven teams within 5 points of each other. Between third and ninth, there's only 5 points separating those teams. So the battle for Champions League football is really, really exciting. At the moment, it's only 14 games gone. It might sort of pan out and be the usual suspects fighting for it come the end of the season. But at the moment, there are loads of teams involved in that, including the mighty Rayo Vallecano and Osasuna as well, both of whom had really, really impressive starts to the season. At the bottom of the table, Elche, the only team without a win all season, just 4 points. They're 8 points from safety. They've got a new manager, Pablo Machin. Let's see how he gets on. Then Cadiz and Sevilla, remember? Sevilla are in the relegation zone. You'd forgotten that, hadn't you, everybody? Well, they're there. They're 18th. It's quite extraordinary. And they are going to be one of the stories of the rest of the season as well. I mean, if they go down, it's one of the biggest stories in Spanish football in recent years. And if they manage to get themselves up and challenging for Europe, also, it's a big, big turnaround. So, Sydney, now I've given you a brief sort of overview of how things stand, and you know, you can admit that you weren't necessarily fully up to date with what was going on because you were in World Cup mode. What are you looking forward to? What are the sort of storylines, the potential things that grab your attention?
Well, I quite like the place that you left off there, and I think you're right. I think it's easy for us during those 12 weeks of the season that did happen to kind of allow ourselves to believe that it's not very real. And actually, a lot of the time, it did feel like it wasn't very real. It felt like a lot of what was happening was conditioned by the fact that there was a World Cup coming. It felt like a lot of it has been kind of broken by the World Cup happening when it happened. And it's almost as if we're restarting. But of course, you restart, to use I'm going to adapt a Spanish idiom here. You restart with that rucksack on your back. And that rucksack is either full of points or got no points on it in it at all, and you're in trouble. And then it's full of stones instead, and it's weighing you down. And I'm absolutely murdering the metaphor at this point. But I think that Sevilla story is really, really significant. And as you said, it's one of the biggest stories in recent years. It genuinely is. You know, this is a team that has, yes, it's true, it's not that long since it was in the second division. I think 2001, I think.
Yeah,
maybe.
20 years.
Yeah,
20
was, years. Was when they came up. But they're a team that haven't just become a regular in the first division. They've become one of the genuine big teams in Spain. If it wasn't for Simeone, we'd be talking about them, I think, as being the third team in Spain. Over the last 20 years, obviously, we've seen Valencia be that team. We've seen the very back end of Depor being that team. We've seen Atletico be that team. But Sevilla are definitely the other one. Sevilla have also, of course, been a presence, a fairly regular presence in the Champions League, and in particular become a European team with those five Europa Leagues or UEFA Cups. They are a club that we look at.
Six,
sorry, yes. They are a club that we look at, and I think this is one of the other reasons why this story is so significant. They're a club that we look at and we think, that's a model of administration. That's a club that does things well. That's a club that buys well, that sells well, that understands which players it wants, that buys the players that it needs, doesn't just buy any old player. It's a club that has an ecosystem that works for the footballers. It's a club that, yes, it's true, has actually been through quite a lot of managers, but there's a handful of managers who've lasted a reasonably long time. And even as they've been through managers and they've been through players, it's always felt like there is an overarching plan that has meant that it is largely made sense. Now, that's not always the case. You think back to Michel being manager, you think back to Marcelino being manager. You may even argue that you think back to the first spell of Sampaoli, and you think maybe these weren't quite the managers that fit the way they wanted to be. But largely, this is a club that it works. And so to see them in this kind of situation, to see them in a situation where not only do you look at it and you think, well, actually, one of their longest-serving managers and one of the managers that did seem to fit, Julen Lopetegui, was in a position where his place at the club was absolutely untenable. And that's despite the fact that largely he was quite liked, but it ended, I think, too late, and everyone felt this should have ended sooner. Then you get in a situation where you've got, all right, so there's a degree of blame for him, but there's also, you look at it and think, this squad isn't well constructed. And this is the club that's embodied by well-constructed squad. This is the club that we all talk about Monchi as being the sporting director that knows what he's doing. So for Sevilla to find themselves in this position, I think is in itself really interesting. Then I think there's the other element to this, which is that the decision in terms of the way that they fix this now, I think is going to be really, really interesting as well. Because you are talking about going back to Sampaoli, who by the end of his first spell, you sort of felt like it didn't entirely fit. But there were elements of what he'd done, certainly in that first 6 months, which were really good. You look at it and you think, this is a club that now has a month of a transfer window to try and fix it. And it's a real test, I think, of Monchi, which maybe hasn't happened before in the time that he spent at Sevilla. And you wonder, How will this change? How many players will come in? Which players will come in? Who will go out? We've already seen the first to leave, of course, which is Isco. And maybe we'll talk about that later. So I think that they're a really, really fascinating story. Even if they now finish 15th, you know, which would be the kind of the epitome of averageness. Even that would be interesting. How did they get to that point? How did they reach that?
I mean, that would be distinctly below average for Sevilla. That would be
it's the epitome of an irrelevant team, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, a team that's 15th or 10th or something is
guess who's 15th at the moment.
But for Sevilla, it'd be huge.
Guess who's 15th at the moment?
I'm going to guess at Celta.
Getafe.
Getafe. Well, there you go. I'll tell you what, I'll set them up. You knock them down.
Yes. Sevilla haven't won at home all season. They have not won. They've only won two games, and they've both come away from home. The good news for them is that they're playing in Vigo.
Let's go back to what we were just saying as well. That's another element in this. You know, it's not just that Sevilla have won at home. This is Sevilla, and we have talked endlessly, not least on our TSFP Presents pods, about the Sancho Pizjuan being a special place, being a place where in theory you go and you don't win. Where the atmosphere is brilliant, where they really get behind the team. And actually, there's been periods this season when they have, even when it's been going badly. But something really strange is happening there. So yeah, I think they're a fascinating story to see out between now and the end of the season. Shall I chuck a couple of others in? Will Elche finally get a decent manager?
Okay, that's not that wasn't top of my list, but okay, yeah, that is one. Yeah.
And can Barcelona hold on? Are Barcelona genuine league leaders? Now, Barcelona fans will get angry at me right now for saying, are they genuinely league leaders? Because they absolutely are, and there's no hiding that. But is this a team that's going to hold on? Or is there sort of enough residual trust and momentum in Real Madrid that Real Madrid will overhaul that? I think that's going to be really quite interesting, because I think if Barcelona are still there and playing well and not conceding goals, because that's the big thing. For all that we talked about Lewandowski, it's the not conceding goals. If they're in that position in 5-6 weeks, then I think, and Madrid are still relatively close to them, I think we've got a really good title race on our hands.
5 goals they've conceded all season in 14 matches. It's a very
and three
impressive.
Of those are in the Clásico, aren't they?
Yes, three of them are in the Clásico. Yeah, absolutely right. I wanted to ask you about this title race, because it does feel like, it feels like one of these classic two-horse title races that we were accustomed to a few years ago, and no one else has been top this season. It's been Real Madrid, it's been Barcelona. In previous seasons, we've had Real Sociedad be top. We've had Villarreal make good starts this season. We've had Atletico end up being champions. But this season, it looks like it's going to be Barcelona and Real Madrid back to that classic two horse race.
Yeah, it does. And I must admit, I'm disappointed by that. Of course, we prefer it when there are other teams involved. And I think you look at Atletico Madrid's record. And it's not just those two league titles. I'm at the risk of getting this wrong now, but I think in the last 7 years, I think they've finished ahead of Real Madrid 4 times. So I think it's 4-3 in terms of their head-to-head with Real Madrid. Now, that's not about them against Real Madrid. It's about demonstrating that there really, truly was a third team. You know, there wasn't just one team against one against the other. There really was a third team almost all the way through this last decade. We've had, as you say, Sevilla and Real Sociedad and other teams that at times have looked like they might get in there. I suspect that won't be the case this year, but I do think that we've got a set of pretty strong teams competing for third, fourth and fifth. Not least, I think, because we haven't got a very strong Atletico, although that's another story. How much of Atletico Madrid's issues were about them not really having that sense of togetherness, not really having a collective identity? How much of that was built around the World Cup? How much of that changes now the World Cup's out of the way? And I do think the World Cup is, at least on a sort of subconscious level, a really big factor in everything we've seen so far this season. And I think at Atletico Madrid in particular. So I suppose the other question would be, do Atletico Madrid now emerge and become that third team again? Do they step away from the others? Now, one of the reasons to suggest not is that they've actually got quite a bit of stepping to do that.
Well, they don't. I mean, they're only 2 points behind La Real, who are third.
But it's La Real who are third. It's Betis who are right on the back of them. They've got to throw off more than one team.
Yes, that's true.
I think they should probably step away and become that third team, but I'm not entirely convinced they will. Obviously, the other thing to factor into Atletico Madrid is what happens now with João Félix.
Yep.
What do they do about that striking position? They've just sold Cunha, although I think that's financial. I don't think that necessarily is a demonstration that they buy a centre-forward. Mm-hmm. I think they only buy a centre-forward if another player goes.
Where does Griezmann play?
I would like to see him play with a free role as a forward, but allowed to drop into midfield and become involved. But then you've got to find, it's quite difficult to build a structure that makes that work.
Just going back to the World Cup, it's occurred to me that, 10 players are coming back to La Liga as world champions. There are 10 Argentines from La Liga involved in that squad.
Is it that many?
Yeah, it's 10. Some of them were relatively peripheral figures, Geronimo Rulli, Juan Foyth, etc. But do you think, is it a positive thing to come back as a world champion, or could it actually be difficult to get back up for the day-to-day grind? I mean, it's literally the biggest thing any of them will ever achieve. And to come back and, to have an away game at Elche on a Tuesday night, maybe it's going to be difficult to be up for that again for those Argentine players. I don't know.
Well, this speaks to the example I was giving on the last podcast. I was talking about that time when Frank Leboeuf was on, I won the World Cup. and I think there's an element of that. And I think for some players, it is difficult. And I also think, by the way, it's not always as deliberate as it sometimes seems, that sense of...
No, it might just be subconscious.
It's about the environment, about the sense of, a World Cup. Right, I'll give you an example. And the risk...
I mean, you're struggling and you didn't even win the World Cup,
Exactly. So, yeah. I did win the World Cup, yeah.
You did, sort of, champion, yeah. You were there,
But I mean, one example that always comes to my mind is Paul Pogba. The extraordinary performances of Paul Pogba at the last World Cup, the sense of leadership, the sense of togetherness, the sense of him having a place. And then being at United, where it wasn't, I don't think it was a deliberate downing of tools. It was just this sort of didn't feel like his place to him. I'm playing it as a psychologist very much from the outside here. But I think there's definitely an element of that. I think it's quite hard for players. And I think if you look at certain types of players, I think different types of players respond differently, but certain types of players and players where they maybe need a structure around them. And I know he's not a world champion, but for example, someone like João Félix who needs a structure around him. I find Rodrigo de Paul's position really interesting in all of this, because Rodrigo de Paul at Atletico Madrid started really well. Remember us talking about what a good player we thought he looked for the first, 4 or 5 months, maybe 6, I'm not sure. And actually, for the last 6 months, he's looked really quite poor. Every now and again, you see something from him, but it sort of hasn't felt right. And you watch him with Argentina, and it's not that he's amazing. It's not that he's suddenly pulling out sensational passes, although his passing's good. It's the sort of the sense of being everywhere and being involved in everything in a kind of auxiliary role. And I hope those of our listeners who are kind of tactical analysts and are interested in the tactical side of things aren't screaming at me for this. But I watch him and I sort of think with Argentina, does he kind of need someone like Messi to feel like he's serving, if you like, that supporting role, and it's really worth it because it's for this guy? And that maybe at Atletico Madrid, it's been harder for him to feel like he's playing that role because he's not sort of working towards someone, if you see what I mean. And I just wonder if maybe he felt that more in the year that they won the league and doesn't so much feel it now.
I mean, that is quite a sort of deep delve into amateur psychology. But yeah, I mean, there could possibly be something in there, definitely. Shall we talk about the final missing piece of the puzzle for Rayo Vallecano's Champions League push? And that is R.D.T. He's available, he's back with Rayo, and he is going to propel them to top four glory. Well, I don't know, but they're only 2 points off a Champions League spot, Rayo, and they have had a tremendous opening 14 games of the season, and they've got a really good striker to come into this. I mean, Raúl de Tomás is a 30-40 million euro striker, easily, and they got him for 8 million. Okay, they had to wait for 6 months for him to play, but it's an incredible deal for Rayo. And okay, I'm being a little bit optimistic and a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but he comes into this team and they start scoring more goals, which has been a little bit of a problem for them this season. They could challenge for Europe.
Yeah, I'm allowing myself to be as optimistic as you. I think they're a really good team, very, very well organised. I think they understand exactly how they want to play. The approach is very clear. The approach is very difficult for opposition teams to stop as well, because it's an approach that doesn't necessarily allow you to get on top of them, because they move the ball really, really quickly. So I think they're very, really quite direct. They, at times, maybe it lacks a little bit of subtlety, yeah, perhaps, but I think it's very difficult to stop. The question, I suppose, would be, I suppose there's two. One is directly about Raúl de Tomás, which is, how quickly does a player get up and running when he's been out for this long? Emotionally, now you would imagine, wouldn't you, that he's absolutely invested in this now because he knows what he's lost. And that includes, by the way, going to a World Cup, because I think had he been playing regularly, he may well have got in that Spain squad. You don't know for sure, and maybe not, but he would have been a candidate for that Spain squad. So he knows he's missed a World Cup. He knows he's missed a lot of football. In that sense, he also knows that he left Espanyol with quite a lot of questions about him in terms of his attitude. And I personally think some of those might be a little bit unfair. And I certainly think that given the way that he's talked about it, he feels that some of those are unfair. And so if you add all of these ingredients together, this is a guy with a point to prove and time to make up. And so he should hit the ground running. But is it that simple when you haven't been competing on a physical level, on an emotional level, to just kind of start playing? So that's about him. The other part is about him and about this team. How well does he fit? Now, we think he fits quite well in terms of how they play. But inevitably, that involves a degree of retuning, a degree of slightly shifting the way that the forward plays. Because we saw that, for example, that team was slightly different with Falcao in it as it was with Sergio Guardiola as it was with Camello in it. And so you now look at it and go, Raúl Tomás does different sorts of things. He quite likes the ball to him early. He quite likes to play a role in the building up of the moves, when in fact Rayo are a team that build up from the wings rather than through to the forward immediately. So there might be a bit of, what would we call it, kind of recalibration, I suppose, of that. But you're right, on the face of it, he gives them the goals that they haven't always taken, because I actually think they're a team that create more chances than they do score goals. Yes. And they score a reasonable amount of goals as it is.
Yes. Yeah, really interested to see how Raya get on with Raúl de Tomás. Just behind them in the table, a place and a point behind Raya, are Villarreal, who have got Quique Setién, the new manager, who came in with a few matches to go before the World Cup break and begged everyone, you know, give me a bit of time, give me some time to work with the players. He did not hit the ground running, two defeats, and then scraped a win against Espanyol in the final game before the World Cup. There were suggestions that he might actually have been sacked before that World Cup break. It didn't happen. He's had the time that he's wanted to with the players, although last week in the Copa del Rey, they were taken to extra time by Loli Guijuelo before overcoming them 2-1. Gerard Moreno's back from injury. That will help, obviously, having a player of his quality, but it does feel like teams create a lot of chances against this Villarreal side. Even when they don't have a lot of the ball, Villarreal absolutely dominate possession with Quique Setién and yet still look a little bit defensively vulnerable. And if they don't hit the ground running, he's going to be under a huge amount of pressure very, very quickly.
Yeah, and I think the fact that there was suggestions that he would go before the World Cup actually increased that pressure, because I think it increases that sense of we should have acted before. And as soon as you start thinking we should have acted before, then you have the pressure to act now. It's like, we were slow then, let's not be slow again. And so I think he needs to be winning quickly. On the face of it, this is a team with the kind of players that Setién likes. On the face of it, this is a team that could play his way. I think a team that was just about underachieving already this season, because we said lots of times we thought that in terms of the squad, in terms of the quality of the players, they really should have been a team that could compete, maybe not for the league title, although possibly, but certainly for the top four. And that wasn't really happening. I still think that's the case with Setién. I still think that he, in a way, he shouldn't be asking for time, because he had all the things that he should need were there. This isn't the case of a manager. First of all, it shouldn't necessarily be a case of a manager completely changing the style, because while there are some shifts with Setién, of course there are, actually you can ease your way into that because you've got a style that I think he can embrace, even if it's a little bit more defensive, a little bit more cautious, all of those kind of things. Although I actually think sometimes with Setién, we make the mistake of thinking he's an attacking manager. I think he's a controlling manager rather than an attacking manager, if you see what I mean. And I think that can be really great to watch when they get it right, but it can also kind of segue into that sort of possession for its own sake problem that occasionally happens. Well, what happened with Spain at the World Cup,
yes,
for example. I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens with them. And it feels, doesn't it, like there isn't a huge amount of warmth for him, which seems to me very premature for that to be the case, but maybe so. The other thing I would say, I suppose, here is that we talk about time to work with his players, but he's had quite a lot of players away. Not all of them, but a handful of important players. I suppose the good thing from his point of view, if you look at a spine of that team, you'd go, Albiol didn't go to the World Cup, although he left Albiol out, didn't he, the first couple of games, which to me was strange. Danny Parejo didn't go to the World Cup. Gerard Moreno didn't go to the World Cup. Now, those are three players that, in theory, should be the spine of your team. So maybe that helps.
Yes. Let's see. Their first two games are their local derby against Valencia and then Real Madrid. So it's a big restart for Villarreal. And let's see how they get on under Quique Setién and how long he's there. A quick word then about the potential relegation battle as well. The relegation battle and who's going down. Elche, 8 points from safety. They look doomed. Cadiz are level on points with Sevilla, and then you've got Celta, Espanyol, Getafe, Almeria, Girona, Valladolid and Mallorca are separated by, 8 points. So all those teams will be looking over their shoulders, but which of the three you feel are going to go down?
Well, I mean, Elche, if only because of the size of the gap. And I said earlier, floated as one of the questions, whether Elche might finally have found a manager. But even if they have, that's a free match winning run needed to turn it round. And that's a big ask. I mean, yes, it's true that it's not impossible and you only have to have a couple of good weeks and suddenly everything looks totally different. But it's a big ask. And Pablo Machin has a slightly checkered record as a manager, doesn't he?
Yes.
It's been curious, his career, because it was absolutely brilliant to start with, and what he did at Girona was brilliant, but it never really seemed to fully translate into other clubs. So I think you've got to say that they're favourites. I feel like Cadiz are, if only because I feel like there are limitations with Cadiz's squad. I think that they are largely in the place that they would expect to be. That's one thing that I suppose would make you think maybe that, and this is important. I don't know how important, because I don't know how to judge this and how to measure it. But I think it's important teams who sort of have been there, who kind of don't lose their heads over the fact that they're near the bottom, because they always expected to be near the bottom, if you see what I mean. You know, so a team like Sevilla, or maybe a team like Celta, who've also changed the manager, you sort of find yourself in that position. And I think there is a possibility that you panic. Now, obviously, there's a quality to pull you out of it as well. Or maybe there's a possibility to not panic enough, to think, we're better than this. This will come. And I do think there is something to be said for teams who understand what it is to be down there. And you know what? I'm not really thinking so much about Cadiz in this, but I'm thinking about Mallorca. And I think Mallorca's position, as you say, you've named them as one of the teams in theory in that relegation fight. I think they'll be really happy with where they are. I'm really happy about how well it's going and their sense of, if you like, their sense of control over their destiny, their sense of where this leads them and where they are. And I think broadly speaking, the same will be true of Valladolid, who I think play really quite nice football at times. It's not consistent, it's not regular throughout their games, but there's moments. And so I think those two teams who I would normally say to you, well, Valladolid and Mallorca are candidates for sure. And they still are candidates, by the way. I look at them and I feel like they sort of, it feels like they know where they are and they know what they're doing. And so I suppose you would say Elche with Cadiz and with, I mean, you would think Espanyol shouldn't get dragged into it, but could do. So who am I missing? I mean, I feel like I'm missing someone from down there.
Getafe, Almeria.
Almeria, Girona. Maybe. Yeah. Almeria, maybe. But let's see what Almeria do in this transfer window. Although, of course, we know that although they have the money, they don't have the financial fair play margins to be able to make the signings that they might want to.
They've brought in Colombian Luis Suarez, so let's see if...
Yeah, and that's potentially a very good signing,
Okay. Speaking of goals, let's just remind ourselves who are the top goal scorers in La Liga, because, again, that's something that everybody will probably have forgotten in these 7 weeks. Robert Lewandowski, Barbie, has banged in 13 goals for Barcelona. He's leading the way clear ahead of Borja Iglesias and Vedat Muriqi of Mallorca, who have both got 8. Then Barry Aspas and Joselu are on 7. Chimi Avila has got 6, along with Bryce, Vinny Jr. and Fede Valverde. So there we go. That was our little preview pod of what's coming up in La Liga, what to look forward to, some of the storylines that we're looking forward to. Obviously, we didn't talk about everything and we didn't go in depth on Barcelona or Real Madrid. If you'd like us to do so, why not become a patron at patreon.com/TSFP. We do a Q&A pod every week and a bonus podcast every week. And you get Al's paper reviews as well. Loads and loads and loads of bonus content there. So if you're in any way a fan of Spanish football, it might be worth investing 4 little euros or dollars or pounds a month for extra content. patreon.com /TSFP. Sydney, have a safe flight. You're off to the UK for a couple of days. Make sure you get back in time for Atletico against Elche. And we'll speak soon, amigo. Adios.
Cheerio.